We all have dark periods in our lives. We all face difficulties that seem insurmountable. We all encounter setbacks. And when we do, we're often tempted to throw in the towel. Most philosophers have tried to help us to reduce the amount that we suffer. They've offered consoling advice on how to make the pain go away. But there was one philosopher with a far more bracing take on the subject. Friedrich Nietzsche believed that all varieties of suffering and failure were to be welcomed by anyone seeking happiness. We should regard them as tough challenges to be overcome, in the same way as a climber might tackle a mountain. Almost alone among philosophers, he thought it was an advantage to have serious reversals in life. He wrote, "To those human beings who are of any concern to me, I wish suffering, desolation, sickness, ill-treatment, indignities, profound self-contempt, the torture of self-mistrust, and the wretchedness of the vanquished." And to understand what Nietzsche meant, it helps to scale one of his favorite mountains, Pitzcorvatsch, high in the Swiss Alps. I'm now standing on the top of Pitzcorvatsch, and the view is extraordinary, sublime. There's a complete stillness in the air. Clouds are just drifting over us. We can see clouds below us, and then through the clouds, villages and forests. You feel like you're on the top of the world, and the air is curiously light, and you feel a kind of elated feeling. And I think that here we can start to understand why Nietzsche placed such an emphasis on the tops of mountains. It's at the very top of the mountain that come the finest views, but it's, of course, extremely hard to get to them. And this is symptomatic of his view that to reach anything that's worthwhile, to reach anything that's valuable, you have to go through an extraordinary amount of effort. Friedrich Nietzsche certainly knew a lot about effort, both physical and mental. His life was one of exceptional hardship. He constantly struggled against illness, dizziness, headaches, vomiting, probably all symptoms of the syphilis he picked up in a Cologne brothel as a student. He was forced on a restless journey around Europe in search of somewhere where the climate wouldn't upset his delicate constitution. And the place that best agreed with him was Sils Maria, high in the mountains in the southeastern corner of Switzerland. Nietzsche came here for the first time in June 1879 and immediately fell in love with the place. "I now have Europe's best and mightiest air to breathe," he wrote. "Its nature is akin to my own." He spent 8 summers in Sils Maria, living in this barely furnished room rented from a farmer. It was here that he worked on some of his most important books, including Thus Spoke Zarathustra, Beyond Good and Evil, and Twilight of the Idols. But his work enjoyed little success in his lifetime. Although he'd been made a professor by the age of 24, he was completely out of tune with his colleagues and was finally forced to retire at the age of 35. For the rest of his life, he had very little money, and the many books he worked on here went largely unread. He lived a life of routine. He would rise at 5 in the morning, write until midday, and then take walks up the huge peaks that necklace the village. But he didn't just live amongst the mountains for the air and the nice views. The landscape he saw around him spoke to his deepest sense of himself and his work. Philosophy, he declared, is a voluntary living in ice and high mountains. Nietzsche's love life was as disastrous as his professional career. All his attempts to seduce women were in vain. Many were frightened by his large moustache, and he confessed to feelings of appalling loneliness. He wrote to a married friend, "Thanks to your wife, things are 100 times better for you than for me. You have a nest together. I have, at best, a cave." Nietzsche immersed himself in philosophy, but his working life was cruelly cut short. He ended his days in madness, having famously broken down and embraced a horse in Turin in 1889. He returned to his boarding house, danced naked, thought of shooting the Kaiser, and believed himself to be, amongst others, Jesus, Napoleon, Buddha, the King of Piedmont, and Alexander the Great. He was bundled into a train to Germany and put into an asylum, where he was looked after by his sister and his elderly mother until he died 11 years later at the age of 56. A key lesson that Nietzsche's life of hardship taught him was that any worthwhile achievement was born out of constant struggle and hard work. Though we sometimes suppose that success comes easily and naturally to some people, there was no such thing as a straight path to the top in Nietzsche's eyes. "Don't talk about giftedness or inborn talents," he wrote. "One can name all kinds of very great people who are not very gifted. They acquired greatness, they became geniuses, and they did so by overcoming difficulties." It's a lesson that the ballerina exemplifies. Monica Perego is a principal dancer with the English National Ballet.
It takes a lot of work, also dedication. It's a job that you do for love, really. And basically, it's just a lot of practicing the same step over and over again till you get it right, and you make it seem effortless. And a lot of pain in the body, of course, because it's a lot of strain for the muscles. And pain on the feet, obviously, because you've got these lovely pointes on, which look really nice, but they're quite painful sometimes.
How much does it hurt? I mean, it's hard to imagine.
It depends. You go through phases, really, but you do get a lot of blisters, and you do get aches and pains all the time.
All the time?
Oh, yeah, pretty much, especially backs and, I mean, it's personal, but backs and calves, and that's the worst. And, of course, blister on the toes and, you know, yellow nails. They sound disgusting.
What's a yellow nail?
Well, basically bruised nails.
Bruised
yeah.
toenails.
So, yeah.
And do they bleed as well? Do your feet ever bleed?
Well, yeah, just with blisters. I had actually two toenails coming off as well.
Goodness me.
And, for example, just we were at the Royal Albert Hall in June, and I've been off sick for a while, and I had to come back and go straight into Swan Lake rehearsal. And so my feet weren't used to it. So I had about 10 blisters on my toes, and I had to perform, you know, with like blood and, you know, loads of paddings and try to not to feel the pain. But of course, you always feel it.
Nietzsche said that without pain, without going through pain, there could never be any gain, and that anything that's worthwhile doing in life is going to take you through some awful things. Do you think that's right?
It's right in our career, for sure. definitely. Because it is so straining, but the satisfaction at the end of a performance or at the end of someone's career, it's so amazing that no aches and pain would, you know, take that amazement away from it, you know.
The pain was worth it.
Oh yes, definitely.
At the heart of Nietzsche's philosophy is a simple idea. Difficulty is normal. We shouldn't panic or give up when we experience it. We feel pain because of the gap between who we are at the moment and the person we could ideally be. It's because we can't master the ingredients of happiness straight away that we suffer as much as we do. But Nietzsche didn't think it was enough just to suffer. If hardship was all it took in order to be fulfilled, then all of us would be happy. The challenge is to learn to respond well to suffering, perhaps to use it to create something beautiful. Friedrich Nietzsche was one of the few philosophers to speak of the virtues of hardship and failure. He thought that we could all potentially benefit from them.
You know,
Paul Brown ran a drinks distribution company outside Manchester, which went bankrupt last year. He's now back in business, but the experience of failure changed his life for the better.
As a person, do you think as you come in here every morning, do you think you're slightly different because you've had this experience?
Yeah, I'm in earlier for a start.
Yeah.
But no, I don't let the little problems, I don't let them get on top of me.
Yeah.
You know, it's a little problem. You know, it'll go away. You don't take it into it's like massive, you know, like it's the end of the world.
Yeah.
You know, the end of the world happened, you know, a couple of months ago, and it failed, and suddenly there's a new world. So, well, it hasn't ended at all. So you don't think a problem is the end of the world, you know, so...
So in a way, you don't panic as much, because you think, well, I've been through the worst has happened,
yeah.
And I came through it.
Yeah, you do. Because, you know, it's not as bad. It really isn't as bad, you know, as what everyone makes out, you know.
Yeah.
Failing is horrible. I wouldn't like anyone to fail. But have the experience of failing, have the feeling of the experience of failing, at least, you know, because that's horrible. But try not to fail, you know. But everyone fails, I suppose. Yeah. So.
And yet, I don't know, I mean, I always think, I think it's something interesting that Nietzsche says, is that we slightly live in a culture where failure is not spoken of. It's like there are these failures and sort of that's just this freakish thing that happens to a few people and let's not talk about them.
Mm.
And then there's success. But somehow the two are not brought together. And I think what's quite interesting is to think in every life, even a good life, even a successful life, it's going to involve some failure at some level. Not necessarily a huge level, but at some level.
Well, how would you be able to judge your success if you haven't failed? Yeah?
Paul's experience in many ways confirms Nietzsche's analysis of the benefits of failure. However, Nietzsche's point is more subtle. He didn't think that having failed was in itself enough. All lives have failures in them. What makes some lives fulfilled as well is the manner in which failure has been met. It's a surprising fact about Nietzsche that for a time he wished to abandon the bookish life in favor of becoming a full-time gardener. The plan never really came off. But cultivating plants taught him an important lesson.
Nietzsche thought that we should look at many of our problems like gardeners. Now, gardeners come across a lot of plants with very ugly roots. If we take this one, I think it's a particular monster. Look at that, fairly ugly. But what gardeners are able to do is to cultivate something that looks initially very ugly into something very beautiful. Look at this, rather stunning. And Nietzsche thought this was a kind of metaphor for what we should do in our own lives. That is, take situations that look initially very horrible, very dark, and grow out of them something beautiful.
There's something very uplifting about Nietzsche's botanical view of our problems. Even our most negative, ugly, dark feelings can be cultivated to produce something fruitful. But it's entirely up to us to make this happen. Envy, for example, might just lead to bitterness, but could, if properly trained, spur us on to compete with a rival and produce something wonderful. Anxiety might make us panic, or it might blossom into an accurate analysis of what's wrong, and so to peace of mind. And that's why Nietzsche wished misfortune on his friends, because he believed that hardship was a necessary evil out of which, if these friends were skilled, they might be able to harvest beautiful things.
Would you ever wish failure on your friends?
No. The feeling of failure, yeah.
Feeling of failure.
The feeling of failure.
Why?
Because the feeling of failure is horrible. And the feeling of making it again afterwards, just it puts it into context on how bad it feels to fail. You know, so the feeling afterwards is so much better.
Have you ever been to Naples?
No.
Okay, well, Nietzsche went to Naples and Nietzsche says, in order to get great happiness from life, in order to harvest great happiness, you've got to live dangerously, he says.
Mm.
And he advises you to build your homes on the slopes of Mount Vesuvius, which is a slightly reckless thing to do. Reckless, but it's a beautiful view. You see the sea, you get a wonderful view. And that's kind of his, you know, his idea that life's a risky business and no pain, no gain.
True, yeah. You've got to take a chance at some point, I think. You know, because if you don't take a chance, then how will you ever know? I mean, the views could be absolutely fantastic, but if you say to yourself, if it erupts, you know, but the problem's a landslide, well, you'll never know if the views are that good. And the views could, you know, make up for that risk, that danger.
If Nietzsche gave some thought to what some good responses to problems might be, he also castigated what were, in his view, the disastrous ones. One of the worst was to head for the pub.
One of the most striking facts about Nietzsche is that he hated drinking alcohol. And this was more than just a personal taste.
He believed that anyone with even the slightest interest in being happy should never go anywhere near a drop of alcohol. As he put it, all the more spiritual natures should abstain from alcohol completely. Water always suffices. Water, the Nietzschean drink.
To imagine there is benefit in escaping our troubles once in a while with an alcoholic drink or two is to misunderstand completely the Nietzschean analysis of the relationship between happiness and pain. Happiness does not come from escaping troubles. It comes from cultivating them, from turning them to your advantage. The last thing Nietzsche thought we should do with our sorrows is drown them. Our worries are vital clues, telling us what's wrong with our lives and pointing the way to our ultimate improvement. Nietzsche was born in the tiny village of Röcken in what used to be East Germany. His father was the parson. His deeply devout mother was herself the daughter of a parson. The philosopher adored his father and must have been deeply shocked when he died suddenly when Nietzsche was only 4 years old. The loss was to haunt him throughout his life. One of his first actions when he finally earned a little money after winning a court case against a publisher was to buy a large headstone which now covers his father's grave. And on it, Nietzsche had inscribed a quotation from the New Testament, Die Liebe höret nimmer auf, love never ceases, a traditional Christian message.
Even though Nietzsche loved his father deeply, even though he's buried in a Christian graveyard right next to his father, the pastor, Nietzsche had the greatest reservations about the kind of assistance that Christianity brings us when we're facing difficulties and problems.
It's striking to visit the house where Nietzsche was born, right under the shadow of the Lutheran church where his father preached, completely unchanged since he lived here. Little Nietzsche must have grown up breathing an intensely religious atmosphere. So it's very surprising to read the philosopher and find out what he had to say as an adult about his parents' religion. One does well to put gloves on when reading the New Testament. In the entire New Testament, there is only one solitary figure one is obliged to respect. Pilate, the Roman governor. And, quite simply, it's indecent to be a Christian today.
Nietzsche was rather against Christianity for the same reasons as he was against getting very drunk. In the short term, going to hear a service in a Christian church may make you feel quite good in the same way as getting very drunk may make you feel quite good. But in the long term, Christianity, in Nietzsche's eyes, dulls pain. And in this way, it also dulls the energy that pain can give us to overcome problems and so reach real happiness.
There are undeniably certain differences between a pub and a church. But Nietzsche insisted that there were great similarities between the consolation available in both places. It seemed to him that the New Testament tried to make us feel better by saying that many things we thought of as problems are not in fact problems at all, but rather assets. To anyone worried about being too timid, the New Testament advises, "Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth." To anyone worried about not having any friends, the New Testament says, "Blessed are you when men hate you, when they exclude you and insult you." And to anyone who worries about not having enough money and who envies those who do, the New Testament has these soothing words. "It's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of God." Nietzsche took such words to be catastrophic. Like alcohol, Christian counsel might dull pain, but it will also weaken the resolve to overcome the problem from which the pain has arisen. So how would Nietzsche have preferred Christians to behave when faced with difficulties? Chiefly by not pretending that they didn't want the things that were difficult to get. Nietzsche had a host of difficulties. He was poor and sick and lonely. but he never behaved in the way that he had accused Christians of behaving. That is, he never declared that health and wealth and love were bad. He accepted that he didn't have them, partly by choice, partly by circumstance. But he did not deny his wishes. He did not deny his pain. And so, it perhaps comes as no surprise to find in the parish records of his burial here in Röcken that the church authorities have written, beside his name, the words, "A known Antichrist." Although his life was hard, we shouldn't think that Nietzsche was miserable all of the time. On the contrary, he often talked about fulfillment, particularly when he was here in the mountains. But when he does talk about fulfillment, he's thinking of something richer than the sort of cozy well-being we might imagine. He writes sarcastically about people who are addicted to the religion of comfortableness. He calls them small, mean people, hiding in forests like shy deer. But those of us who dare to climb up above the tree line will see the views and breathe the air. It's then that we'll understand the benefits of abandoning comfort for true fulfillment. As Nietzsche famously said, "That which does not kill me makes me stronger."
Like every philosopher in this series, Nietzsche was interested in making people happy. However, unlike every other philosopher in this series, he believed that extremes of pain were a vital component in reaching the kind of happiness he had in mind. Not everything which makes us suffer is necessarily bad for us. Not everything which makes us feel good is necessarily actually good for us. To regard extremes of suffering as an evil, as something to be abolished, wrote Friedrich Nietzsche, is a supreme idiocy.